This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. As the partial government shutdown approaches the three-week mark, a key U.S. senator says it's time for President Trump to evoke emergency powers to get the money to build the wall. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says House Democrats won't budge on their refusal to authorize billions of dollars for a barrier at the U.S.-Mexico border. The Senate won't take up alternative legislation, and he says Congress is stuck and it's time for someone to act.
If the end game is an emergency declaration by the president, do it now. Let's see if it works. If it doesn't work, then you do something else.
Meanwhile, the White House has directed the Army Corps of Engineers to look at their disaster relief emergency funding to see if it could be used to build a wall, money earmarked for disaster relief after hurricanes, fires, and floods. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
A man and teenager captured in separate incidents this past week by Kurdish forces in Syria and identified as U.S. citizens fighting for the Islamic State terror group are likely not Americans. A U.S. official speaking to VOA on condition of anonymity due to the sensitivity of the information said that the 16-year-old Suley Noah Su is not a U.S. citizen. Kurdish fighters with the Syrian Kurdish People's Protection Units announced Su's capture on Wednesday. President Trump's longtime personal lawyer says he'll testify publicly before Congress next month.
Michael Cohen says he'll appear before the House Oversight and Reform Committee, which is looking into hush money payments during the 2016 race to women who claimed having had affairs with Trump. In a written statement, Cohen says he looks forward to a chance to give a full and credible account of the events which have transpired. His testimony will come less than a month before he reports to prison after being sentenced for lying to Congress about his role in a Trump business proposal in Russia. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And this is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is taking jabs at both Iran and Obama administration's Mideast policies while overseas, AP correspondent Matt Small.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has scathing words for the Obama administration's Mideast policies, calling them misguided.
The age of self-inflicted American shame is over.
While speaking in Egypt, Pompeo says the Trump administration offers what he calls a new beginning, adding the U.S. has learned from its mistakes.
We've rediscovered our voice. We've rebuilt our relationships. We've rejected false overtures from our enemies.
Signaling more pressure ahead on Iran until it stops what U.S. officials describe as its malign activities. Matt Small, Washington.
The long-awaited trial of a Frenchman accused of killing four people at a Jewish museum in the Belgian capital began Thursday in Brussels. As Lisa Bryant reports for VOA, the defendant is also believed to be among the first European jihadist fighters who returned from the Middle East.
Mehdi Namoush, now 33, appeared in court wearing an orange sweatshirt and flanked by masked police. He's accused of shooting dead four people in under 2 minutes in 2014 at the Jewish Museum in Brussels. He's also believed to be the first jihadist fighter returning from Syria's battlefields to stage a terrorist attack in Europe. Days after the shooting, Namoush was arrested in the southern French city of Marseille as he got off from a bus from Brussels. Police reportedly found weapons in a sports bag he was carrying. If found guilty, he faces life in prison. Another Frenchman is also on trial for allegedly supplying Namoush's weapons.
That's Lisa Bryant reporting for VOA. Three Russian companies have cut ties to a sanctioned oligarch. It will no longer be under U.S. sanctions themselves. That's according to Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. Mnuchin appeared before the House of Representatives, where a number of Democrats want the Trump administration to postpone lifting sanctions against the three firms. In a statement issued before the meeting with Congress, Mnuchin said that Oleg Deripaska will remain under U.S. sanctions, but the three companies he controlled will not. Mnuchin assured lawmakers that the Trump administration will keep a close watch on the firms, promising that if they fail to comply with the terms to end the sanctions, they will face very real and swift consequences, including the reimposition of sanctions. Treasury placed sanctions on the company in April 2018 for what it called Russian malign activity, including election meddling and crimes by Deripaska himself. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Bote in Washington. Today's Friday, January 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Congo's ruling coalition says it accepts the results of the December election.
For the ruling coalition, the result is a genuine will of the Congolese people. The person elected is elected fairly and freely.
Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for DRC's ruling coalition. Meanwhile, Western powers are voicing skepticism and concern over the DRC election results. Uganda's main opposition says it welcomes calls by a British parliamentarian for sanctions on Uganda. And Zimbabwe doctors call off their nationwide strike, but without their demand to be paid in U.S. dollars.
We're very happy that they're back. We've always called for everybody to be back at work, and we're happy that they've heeded the call, because it's for the benefit of all our patients. It's for the benefit of Zimbabweans.
Obidia Moyo is Zimbabwe's health minister. A Guinean opposition leader is taking issue with Russian ambassador's suggestion for President Alpha Conde to stay in power. And the National Basketball Association opens an elite academy in Senegal. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Congo's ruling coalition says it accepts the results of the December 30th presidential elections announced late Wednesday night by the country's electoral commission. Andre Alain Atundu, the spokesman for President Joseph Kabila's ruling Common Front for Congo coalition, says the results reflect the genuine will of the Congolese people. Electoral Commission Chair Corneille Nangaa said opposition leader Felix Tshisekedi won 38.5% of the vote, more than 7 million votes, while another opposition candidate, Martin Fayulu, received about 6.4 million votes. Emmanuel Ramazani Shadari, the hand-picked candidate of President Kabila, came third with about 4.4 million votes. Atundu says the ruling coalition accepts the election of Tshisekedi because it will bring about a post-electoral social peace.
For the ruling coalition, the result is a genuine will of the Congolese people. The person elected is elected fairly and freely. So we accept this, and we ask people who are not happy with this, especially between the candidates, they have to seize the courts instead of contesting in the street or through the television. For us, the price of this peaceful election is a post-electoral social peace. Of course, some people, particularly the people of Mr. Fayulu, were not happy, but that's all. It was not enough to make troubles.
The Catholic Church has come out to say that according to its own election tallies, the results are different. I mean, there's a different winner. You mentioned Mr. Fayulu. Mr. Fayulu is saying that the results do not reflect the truth of the ballots.
What's the relevance of this opinion of Catholic Church? They had only about 17,000 observers for 80 voting bureaus. So I think it's better for us to relay the figures from CENI than the figures from Catholic Church, because we think that the position is an ideological one. They had the opinion before the result. But as the philosopher said, facing the reality, there is no argument. And the reality is Mr. Tshisekedi is the winner of this election. Our candidate, Mr. Shadari, is only on third position. So we have to turn the page. The people have spoken, and the game is over. Now it's time to build this country together in a national cohesion and fairly.
Before the results were announced, there was the speculation that your coalition was in discussion with Tshisekedi in terms of a coalition government. Did Mr. Tshisekedi promise, say, not to bring legal action against President Kabila or anybody in this government as a way of getting you on board to accept his election?
No, there has no deal before. The only deal is a legal deal according to our constitution. If the president identifies a majority in the National Assembly, he has to choose the prime among the members of this majority so that he can form the government. So we are happy with our position.
Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling Common Front for Congo Coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Western skepticism is growing over the Democratic Republic of Congo's announced presidential election results, with France bluntly calling them inconsistent with other findings and former colonial power Belgium planning to raise the matter at the United Nations Security Council today, Friday. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
France was quick to react to the surprise win of opposition candidate Félix Tshisekedi in the Democratic Republic of Congo's presidential election.
Il semble bien que les résultats proclamés, Monsieur Tshisekedi.
Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian told French TV the announcement did not conform with other results, notably those produced by Congo's Catholic Church, which he described as totally different. Le Drian called for calm and clarity in the true election tally. Former colonial power Belgium was more nuanced. Belgium Foreign Minister Didier Reynders told local RTBF broadcaster his country would bring up the matter at the United Nations Security Council. He said given the chaotic election process, he could understand the fears expressed in some quarters. The DRC's powerful Catholic Church says results tallied by its own election observers do not match the official ones. The church did not name a winner, but reports say its count finds opposition candidate and businessman Martin Fayulu coming out top. Fayulu described the official results as an electoral coup. The European Union, whose ambassador to the DRC was expelled shortly before the vote, also offered a guarded reaction. Spokeswoman Maya Kosiyanjic.
We have also noted that these results have been contested by a part of the opposition. We are also waiting for the reactions of different observation missions that have observed the elections and partners, in particularly in Africa.
The latest developments add to a broader snapshot of disarray and questionable practices in the long overdue vote to succeed President Joseph Kabila. The Enough Project, a U.S. policy group that focuses on Africa, wants the international community to closely scrutinize the results and take action if they are found to be rigged. Sarah Gardner works for the project's investigative initiative called The Sentry.
I think if that process goes forward, there needs to be international support for full transparency and statements to that effect, not excluding the possibility of increased financial pressures, including sanctions and other financial pressures, if the international community deems and that there's proof that a transparent situation is not happening.
Over the past week, the United States and other key governments have urged the Electoral Commission to publish accurate results or face consequences. Washington has also positioned troops in nearby Gabon to protect its assets in Congo and urged U.S. citizens to leave because of security concerns. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barté in Washington. Today's Friday, January 11th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Doctors in Zimbabwe have ended a 40-day nationwide strike they called to demand better pay and working conditions. The government says the strike resulted in patients unnecessarily suffering and some dying. But patients and health workers are glad to see doctors back on the job. On Thursday, Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Patients began returning to Zimbabwe's largest treatment center after word spread that doctors had called off their 40-day strike on Thursday. One patient, 48-year-old Phyllis Mukundu, has suffered chest pains for more than a month and now struggles to walk and talk. Her mother, Gertrude Ngoshi, helped her to get to the Parenyatwa group of hospitals.
I'm glad to hear that doctors are back at work, says Ngoshi. But my daughter is yet to be attended by any of them. I'm looking forward to her full recovery, and then I know that their return is good news. Because it has been long having her in pain, says Ngoshi. Zimbabwe's doctors went on strike December 1st, demanding better equipment and medicine for hospitals and to be paid in US dollars instead of Zimbabwe's currency, the depreciating bond notes. Health officials met with doctors and patients at major hospitals and showed reporters medical equipment and medicines provided by the government. Zimbabwe Health Minister Obadiah Moyo lauded the doctors' return to work.
We're going in the right direction. We're very happy that they are back. You know, we always want them to be back at work. We've always called for everybody to be back at work. And we're happy that they've heeded the call. Because it's for the benefit of all our patients. It's for the benefit of Zimbabweans.
Announcing the end of the strike, doctors stated that President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government met their demands regarding the equipment and medicines. But the doctors conceded on one of their key desires, to be paid in US dollars. Speaking to VOA, Health Services Board Chairman Paulina Skosana says there is no plan to meet that demand.
You are aware that the Vice President made an emphatic statement that government will not pay the salaries in US dollars. And that is the position of government. And that's the context and framework that government will move forward.
While the compromise could weaken the position of teachers also striking for US dollars, for patients like Mkundu, the deal could be a lifesaver. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Uganda's main opposition forum for democracy change says it welcomes calls by a British parliamentarian for sanctions on Uganda. UK lawmaker Paul Williams says the sanctions could pressure President Yoweri Museveni to stop using state institutions to harass and intimidate opponents. But the youth of the ruling National Resistance Movement expressed regrets that a foreign parliamentarian would seek to interfere in the internal affairs of Uganda. Patrick Oboa Amurayat is leader of the main opposition FDC.
We think that the voice of the ordinary Ugandan and of us who are key players in the politics of this country is now being heard internationally, which is quite positive because for a matter relating to Uganda being given over 30 minutes in the House of Commons is certainly something that needs to be hailed, and because the poor human rights records and respect for the liberties of Ugandans now being highlighted at the global level.
Ruling party supporters are saying that the demands for international sanctions on Uganda is inappropriate and interfering in the internal politics and dynamics of Uganda, which they find objectionable since Uganda, they said, is a sovereign country. What is your take?
Well, of course, they talk about the sovereignty of this country, but one thing that they understand, Uganda belongs to the global community. And because we are partners with the British people as well as, you know, the other countries that we have worked with, I think it is prudent that these countries question the excesses of the regime if they felt their partner is going astray. In this case, we who live in this country know that there's something terribly wrong with our politics. And therefore, for me, I treat this as an awkward defensive mechanism just meant to call sympathy from the international community that is not well deserved. Because all that Dr. Williams said is there is a need for the whip to be cracked so that Uganda improves on its human rights record. If it takes limited sanctions on individuals to be able to achieve this, then why not?
Well, some supporters of the NRM, the ruling party, are saying that welcoming Dr. Williams's urge for sanctions, among other things, is basically unpatriotic of any Ugandan to accept or to praise. What is your response to that?
What would we expect from them? Because they are the ones who are actually on the firing line as far as this is concerned. If they had reacted differently, I would be very, very much surprised.
Patrick Oboa Amurayat is the leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. A Guinean opposition leader takes issue with a Russian ambassador's suggestion that President Alpha Conde should stay in power. President Conde's second and final five-year term expires next year. Russian envoy Alexander Bregedas, speaking Wednesday this week in Conakry at an event attended by President Conde, said there is no need for Guineans to change leadership because all is well under President Conde's leadership. But Sidia Touré, leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party, says he was surprised by the Russian ambassador's comments.
Myself, I was really surprised, because I don't see an ambassador talk about this kind of thing in details like that. You can go on the principles, you know. You can say, we want to have a constitution, we want to have an election, my country wants this or that. But he gives so many details, you can imagine that he's a Guinean. So I think this is not his role. I'm really very surprised, and the opposition party will have a meeting tomorrow and have a strong reaction about that kind of speech.
According to the ambassador, everything seems to be going fine in Guinea, and so the ambassador suggests that why do Guineans want to change when President Conde is doing a very good job?
You know, every country has its own reality. In my country, we have a constitution, but a president can have only two mandates. I don't know what is the constitution in other countries, but here, we cannot have a third mandate in my constitution. If you don't like that, I'm sorry, but this is mine.
But the ambassador argued that constitutions are not dogmas, meaning they can be changed to fit the reality of today.
Can you say so in the United States or, I don't know, in Botswana or, I don't know? Not very fair.
I know President Alpha Conde's term would expire next year. Is there a move somewhere that you know about that the president might be considering to change the constitution?
I really don't know. You know, people are talking about that. But we will see. We all here in Guinea will know what to do. But today, the Guinean constitution is very clear. There is no third mandate in 2020 for nobody.
Sidia Touré is the leader of the Opposition Union of Republican Forces Party in Guinea. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. The National Basketball Association has opened an elite academy in Senegal to provide academic education to African youth while also training them for potential basketball careers. The NBA is partnering with Seed Academy, a basketball and education center that has been in Senegal for years. Joe Lopez, president of Seed Academy, tells Ricky Stryak the goal is not only to help African youth improve their basketball prospects abroad, but also to increase basketball presence in Africa.
We've helped a lot of kids go through the program. They ended up in the U.S. Some of them ended up in Europe. Some of them ended up in Asia. Our most prominent alumni is Golden C. Jang, who is a Minnesota Timberwolves player. He plays in the NBA. He's been there, I believe, 5 years, and he's doing quite well for himself.
How important is it not just to train African youth to play in the NBA in North America, but also to increase NBA's presence in Africa?
Well, that's a very good question. The NBA Academy is also an elite academy for basketball, but it is for the entire continent of Africa. One thing I failed to mention is Seed initially was just for Senegalese players, girls and boys, right? Now, the NBA Academy is a bigger academy because it takes care of all the kids from the continent. And again, it's sports. I mean, it's education first and sports second. We have found synergies today where the Seed program served as a feeder program to the NBA Academy, which means some of the kids from Seed would end up at the Academy in Salou. And I just want to stress the fact that a very small percentage of these kids would end up playing professionally. So what we're doing today is we're ensuring that they're giving back to their communities, they're staying on the continent, if they don't make it somewhere else, and it's okay, you know, because we would have trained them enough to have high school diplomas and some college degrees, because they can go to college in Senegal.
That was Joe Lopez, president of Seed Academy. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. For Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sport in Ghana, where it appears that Kwesi Appiah, head coach of Ghana national team, the Black Stars, is set to extend his contract with the Black Stars ahead of the African Cup of Nations 2019. Head of the Normalization Committee of Ghana Football Association, Kofi Amua, said it is only proper to negotiate contract extension of Kwesi Appiah ahead of the June 2019 AFCON, since his current deal expires in April 2019.
Earlier on, when the contract of the Black Star coach was given, the AFCON was supposed to be February, I believe. So his contract, the one existing now, ends in April, but the AFCON is in June. So obviously we need to look at something and extend it for some period so that there's some certainty of having the technical team to take our Blasters to win the cup.
Kwesi Appiah was talks to win AFCON 2019 after signing a two-year contract with the Ghana Football Association in 2017. And now to neighbors Nigeria, where Nigeria's sports minister Solomon Dalong says the country is considering building a high-performance sports medicine center. The minister said plans are already on the way to acquire some equipment that would be needed to make the center functional.
As a leading country in Africa, we do not have a national high-performance center. And in contemporary sports, without a high-performance center, I mean, you cannot make much progress. We must take steps to begin to acquire some of these very important equipments that we need them to key into modern sports science.
Staying with Nigeria, the Nigerian Football Federation, NFF, on Thursday said it has put in place plans to provide the Super Falcons, the Nigeria women national team, with better preparations for the 8th FIFA Women's World Cup finals. The federation had made plans for the African champions to participate in about 10 matches altogether. The preparation begins with a four-nation invitational tournament in China from January 17th to January 20th, which will be followed by the girls' participation in the Cyprus Women's Cup, billed for February 25th to March the 7th. Asishat Oshola is a Super Falcons forward.
We're young players and we don't think we have enough yet. We still strive for more glory. We have players from the under-20s of 2010 set, 2012 set, 2014 set, 2016 set. So when you have a young squad like this, it's always easy for the coaches to work, because the zeal is already there, the hunger for glory is already there.
Egypt's national handball team will be hoping to perform better than their 2017 appearance when they open their World Championship campaign on Friday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, January 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Borter saying have a good weekend.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.